Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 126, for comics originally released on January 6th, 2010. And aside from what came out this week, I am current on what I consider my new comics list. Even got a few back issues read. I finally read Mr. Stuffins from Boom. A little cliche or whatever, but good. And the Eureka stuff. But the only things I'm behind on for new titles are about probably 20 of the books that came out this week. So I've gotten the three for this and a few others, but I'm finally up to date, which is a nice way to start the year. And, you know, we've got a couple of, you know, event-ish books from Marvel and DC, and then another for others. So let's go ahead and dive into Blackest Night Suicide Squad 67.
I read this, and I'm going to go a little off this one, because I also read the Blackest Night Weird Western that came out this week.
Yeah, I read that one, and the Blackest Night Wonder Woman as well.
Right, and I read that also. But as far as these one-shot, quote-unquote one-shot, you know, things, I thought that they did a lot better job on the Weird Western tales as an issue. It kind of told a story in the context of Blackest Night. Suicide Squad, on the other hand, read to me a lot like Secret Six number 16.5.
Well, you know, it's funny because I not only completely agree with that, I think this should have been the Secret Six issue that led into a Blackest Night Suicide Squad issue.
Because it was a good, you know, given that I'm reading all the stuff, you know, it was like, okay, and I'm reading Secret Six and it worked for me. But, you know, for someone who's picking this up because they have fond memories of the, you know, John Ostrander Suicide Squad run and they're not reading Secret Six, I would say not so much.
Yeah, yeah. Because this very much fell along the lines of, like you said, another Secret Six issue. And there's nothing wrong with that other than the way they marketed this. Because I think a lot of people are reading Secret Six that, you know, maybe had no interest in Suicide Squad, skip this, and they're going to be missing out on what's really the first part of the story arc for the current Secret Six next couple issues.
Well, what's going to happen is they'll pick up Secret Six number 17 and find that it is part two of a storyline, and hopefully they'll, and they don't always do this, you know, they don't always tell you what part one was looking backward. They'll usually tell you what the next thing is. Hopefully they'll be able to pick this up. Any of our listeners who are reading Secret Six, if you didn't pick up the Suicide Squad one, you probably want to do that while it's still out there.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And that's something that I think may tick off some readers. And that's, again, just bad, kind of bad marketing and stuff. They should have handled that better. The part that kind of got me with this, compared again to that Weird Western Tales, the Weird Western Tales, like you said, was a good Blackest Night story. It was also a good Done in One story. This was neither Done in One, nor, frankly, a good Blackest Night story. Because you had some stuff at the beginning where, you know, the Fiddler's coming back, and they've got this great scene of all the people rising out of the JLA tomb, or, you know, whatever you would call that.
Yeah, you make a good point. You have that.
And then at the end, it's, oh yeah, these guys are still around. But the rest of the issue,
you don't see them again. You don't see them again until the last page.
Yeah.
And it's like there's no Blackest Night in between, which is, again, part of why I said it wasn't a Blackest Night thing as much as Secret Six number 16.5, because you didn't get Black Lanterns doing stuff through the issue, which you did get in the Weird Western Tales issue.
Exactly, and that's part of why I felt this was almost a issue that led into what could have been a really good Blackest Night Suicide Squad, because by the end of this, we've got the Secret Six, you know, kind of going toe-to-toe with the Suicide Squad and, you know, the Black Blackest Night tie-in really ready to kick in.
Yeah.
And the Blackest Night part here was just so incidental that if you took that out, this is a Secret Six issue, period.
Right, and that's only out of the 22 pages of the story, it's 3 pages.
Yeah.
Essentially. Maybe 4 if you count the setup page, the first one. It's like 4 pages out of 22 that actually have something to do with Blackest Night and the Black Lanterns. Now, on the Weird Western Tales, they actually have touchbacks to characters that were introduced in Palmiotti and Gray's latest Jonah Hex run, but I don't think that's essential to the story, and that's something that I noticed because I'm reading Jonah Hex, but I don't, you know, for you, I'm not sure that it made any difference because you don't really know if they're from this series or from the original Jonah Hex series, which you may not have read, you know, or whatever. So I don't think it made a whole lot of difference in the context of the story. They told a story that kind of stood by itself, and you can kind of tell, okay, there might be some backstory between, you know, Hex and this guy who's talking about his ancestors and stuff like that, but it wasn't something that, you know, stopped the story.
Well, I haven't read any of the current Jonah Hex stuff. I did read the Hex series where he was in the far future, and I read maybe issues 90, 91, and 92 of the original Jonah Hex series. So my knowledge of those characters is minimal at best. So I'd consider myself, again, somebody coming in cold, not having any exposure to that. And I thought it read excellently as a standalone. It was, you know, a little unclear why this one guy was so important, or if he had any backstory, or had appeared anywhere, I guess, because it was clear.
But you just kind of assumed that he did, right?
Well, it was clear he had a backstory. He felt Jonah Hex had ruined his family, you know, and all of that came out in the story. So if he had shown up nowhere before or in 100 comics before, did not matter. I had everything I needed in that issue.
Which is how it should be.
Exactly.
When you're marketing something as kind of a quote-unquote one-shot. But plus, it was a Blackest Night title, and they delivered. And we're kind of going away from the Suicide Squad, but it's kind of interesting to me since they both came out in the same week.
Well,
and they're the first ones of this, because that was a real Blackest Night story. And again,
yeah.
Suicide Squad, I did not read this feeling like it delivered a Blackest Night story to me, which it's marketed as.
Well, I was just going to go on that phrase you were using of did it deliver, essentially. And for me, if you go about 2 pages past the staple, 2 page flips, you got this face-off between Bronze Tiger and Catman. And the way they set that up, the way they're facing off, you know, it's just really cool. I'm thinking, wow, that's just a fun idea. You know, let's get the two cat guys kind of going at it. And that's all we had this issue for it.
Well, they'll continue that in Secret Six number 17.
Presumably. But again, did this issue deliver? No, not quite.
Not at all.
I mean, it was nice to see Amanda Waller back in action. It was a good use of the Suicide Squad, a good use of the Secret Six, but it was not a done-in-one story. And there are a couple of characters that were not really introduced. If you go a page past the staple and stuff, we've got Nightshade showing up with some other woman. I have no idea who she is. I mean, is she the replacement Fiddler?
I think so.
And was that maybe that was set up in the opening few pages, but I don't think so. And it's like she looked too much like this other, you know, Deadshot replacement character they had, Yasmin or whatever. That it was just a little confusing and a little. That was the one part of the storytelling I thought was a little weak.
The bottom line is, if you're reading Secret Six, this is a must-have. If you're not reading Secret Six, avoid this because it's a waste of your time.
Well, and certainly
that's my opinion.
Certainly, if you're looking for one-shot Blackest Night tie-ins just to, you know, fill out the story or whatever, but you want standalone one-shots, this is not it.
Or even something that contributes to Blackest Night. I didn't feel that this really contributed pretty much anything to Blackest Night.
Certainly not this issue, but I think the next few in the story arc might. Because they seem to be really addressing what happened to all those, you know, cadavers and stuff. That
again, if you're reading Secret Six, and I know some people are just reading the core Blackest Night and Green Lantern titles, and they might be tempted to go out and pick up these one-shot issues.
Right.
And it's like, I would say, Weird Western Tales, go pick that one up. Suicide Squad, if you're not getting Secret Six, don't waste your time.
Well, all I'm saying is, even if you're not getting Secret Six, and you want the full Blackest Night thing, it is entirely possible that this story arc in Secret Six that starts here in Suicide Squad is going to be really dealing with what happened to all of these, you know, dead bodies the JLA had been hanging on to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're interested in that part of the story, this is where it is. So, is this something worth going out of your way for just in general? No. But if you're curious about that part of the overall Blackest Night stuff, maybe.
So, to me, it got like a low 3.
I was there, too. I was almost going to give it a 2.
I give it a low 3 because I'm reading Secret Six.
Yeah, and that's... know?
If I had come in not reading Secret Six, if Secret Six was one of the DC titles that I don't read, I would have given it a 2.
I gave it the 3 because story-wise and art-wise, it was solid.
Yeah.
It just, what they set out to do, I thought was unfortunate in terms of it really should have been a standalone issue. So, I was disappointed with that. The quality was good. It was nothing, you know, wrong in terms of the story, the art, whatever, but I do think it's going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. Those who got it looking for a standalone, those that get Secret Six but not this are going to be...
Should have been called Blackest Night Secret Six 16.5.
Yeah.
And then it would have, like, just played havoc with people's collection numbering systems.
Well, or have this as the issue of Secret Six and the next issue of the story arc as the Suicide Squad one, maybe. They could have packaged it better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the Blackest Night Wonder Woman, just since we're on a Blackest Night thing here, I was last week, you know, it's like, man, I just don't see the point of Wonder Woman that much being the Purple Lantern or Violet Lantern. After reading Blackest Night Wonder Woman number 2, I completely get it. I thought that that was a great issue. I also think that that issue stands alone, really.
Yeah.
You can read just that issue. And it's got a great cover, too. Like Greg Horn or something did the cover. Really nice cover. But it still didn't get me comfortable with Mira as a Red Lantern. But it did a really good job on Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it Rucka, is a great
Rucka
one
told a great story there. If you're not picking up any of these ones, I would say that issue, which is the second issue of a 3-issue spinoff, that stood by itself way better than this Suicide Squad issue did.
Oh, I agree with that. But I would also say, anytime you've got Greg Rucka writing Wonder Woman, pick that up. He just does a great job with that character. You know, I loved his run on the monthly series way back when. While this issue of Blackest Night Wonder Woman was kind of filling in the gaps between panels of Blackest Night 6, and to a certain degree didn't jive 100%, you know, lockstep with that. It didn't violate anything. But, you know, I'm never a huge fan of, okay, I'm going to fill in the gaps of somebody else's story that's just been told. Because it's... Again, it's hard for it to be perfectly in lockstep. It was a good issue, and I agree it further fleshed out the justification of her as a Purple Lantern and as a standalone done-in-one. I get my money's worth from this issue. You know, high marks on that. But Greg Rucka, can't go wrong with him usually, particularly on Wonder Woman. Move on to Marvel.
Yeah. Siege number 1, apparently 7 years in the making.
You know, for a story 7 years in the making, I would have thought this would have made more sense. Now, we had the teleconference last night. I hadn't read the books before that, so I'm reading after that. And I'm also reading the Weird Western Tales, the Blackest Night Wonder Woman. I've read Suicide Squad by this point. I also read Embedded and Gigantic. So I'm up kind of late. And, you know, got only a little bit of sleep before getting up to record this. So that may be coloring my review, but, you know, and you had said a few things like, what the hell about, you know, this, that, and the other. As I was reading through this thing, I thought not only was it a weak start to an event, but it just, there were aspects of it that I thought didn't really make sense.
Let's get a couple of these off the table. First off, when I was reading this, okay, the spoilers, okay? If you haven't read Siege number one, we're going to talk about specific things in this issue. The basic premise of the series is that Norman Osborn gets, for some reason, got a bug up his rump about Asgard hanging over Oklahoma, I guess, or he's going to use that as an excuse to whip up his supervillains into a frenzy and attack Asgard because it's hanging out over Oklahoma. Now, that would be great, except for the fact that the title that you would imagine would tie in tightly to a story about the siege of Asgard would be Thor.
And this is
kind of like, you know, I'll use the analogy of, you know, Green Lantern kind of ties into Blackest Night because it's about power rings and the lantern cores and stuff. So, you know, those titles tie kind of together. So I made sure I read the current issue of Thor, and I'm up on my Thor before I read this. Well, the problem is over in Thor, you know, back in Thor number 600 or something, they moved Asgard out of Oklahoma and they moved it over to Latveria. And latest issue of Thor that's out, he's fighting Doctor Doom and it's over in Latveria. And as best as we could puzzle out last night, Siege number one takes place after the next issue of Thor that has not come out yet. This story has it can't take place before they moved Asgard to Latveria. So the best that we can figure is that in Thor 606, at the end of the, you know, fighting Doctor Doom thing, they move Asgard back to Oklahoma, and, you know, that kicks off the events for Norman Osborn to, you know, get all peeved and come after it. But they really don't make any reference to that here. And in fact, you know, they talk in the bottom here about, you know, it's floating above Broxton, Oklahoma, you know, Thor brought it there. They don't, you know, what they really should do is they should be talking about how
it came back,
moved to Latveria and recently returned to, you know, Broxton, Oklahoma or something. But Marvel has been doing a really crappy job lately of getting books out that have relatively, you know, key plot elements in the right order. You know, I was kind of ranting about that in the Captain America thing a couple of weeks ago, where, you know, the Who Will Wield the Shield comes out before Captain America 6. And then at the end of this, you got Cap in his costume. So I misread Who Will Wield the Shield. You know, so I read Who Will Wield the Shield, and I came away from that story with apparently the mistaken assumption that that Steve Rogers was going to stop being Captain America and was maybe going to go off and be some other character. Well, Siege, there's no way that Siege can take place before that Captain America stuff, unless they're just totally honked up on continuity. So the fact that Steve Rogers is sitting here in his Captain America outfit, you know, well, maybe he has the shield, maybe he doesn't, but Steve Rogers is still going to be going around in the Captain America outfit. So
I was taking this as being
really confused. You know?
I was taking that as this is between the end of Cap Reborn, if that ever comes out, and Who Will Wield the Shield. And that we're going to have a brief period where Steve is in the uniform as well as Bucky. But
I don't even know. I mean, because this is going to be coming out for the next 4 months.
I know, and it's confusing storytelling that way, you know, when they don't kind of sync up with some of the major issues here and there. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, what color socks is somebody wearing or something stupid like that. This is, where is this huge floating city of gods? You know, is it in the U.S. or is it not?
You know, is it in America or is it in the Balkanized Europe, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, little things like that, that bothered me. The thing that also bothered me is why is Norman so set on invading Asgard? His motives are kind of unclear. He seems to be just totally flipping out here. Why is Asgard suddenly a threat? It's been in Oklahoma or wherever, or, you know, then as Latveria and then back for a while. Why is it now a threat worth dealing with? You know, and if it had been, hey, it's we got rid of it and it came back. Okay, maybe. But while I was reading this, this is such a big deal to Norman that he's willing to tell the Dark Avengers, hey, I'll cut you loose, we're square if you do this for me. He's completely jeopardizing his position running Hammer with the president. You know, so he's got a lot on the line here, and it totally seemed unjustified as to why. You know, there's a scene here where he's basically telling Ares, you're going to tell me how to go fight this war, and Ares is like, nothing doing. And then, you know, but he's very respectful to Norman, and I'm like, wow, this is a very different Ares than I was just reading in the really good Dark Reign Ares 3-issue miniseries, where he was basically telling, you know, Norman, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. If it lines up with you, great. If not, you're just some puny mortal kind of a thing. And you know, Norman was having to manage Ares, whereas here, Ares is, I don't want to say being a lackey, but there's not that same dynamic, and that kind of bothered me. And the fact that it doesn't sync with the Thor title was problematic, but not... it's frustrating in terms of they can't get that straight. To me, the biggest weakness of this story was this whole bit with Volstagg essentially, you know, blowing up, what was it, Soldier's Field?
Soldier Field in Chicago during a football game.
That, I mean, let's replay the Stanford incident that kicked off Civil War. I mean,
well,
this...
that's the way I read it was that Osborn sent the UFOs specifically to do this and kill all these people. To
yes.
set off the reason to have the Siege of Asgard. Because the UFOs, I mean, they throw Volstagg into Soldier Field.
Right. No, and I get it. It was a setup and stuff. But that kind of a let's blow up another whole bunch of people and reignite the Stanford, you know, incident stuff seems like instead of being justification for a Siege of Asgard, should be justification for rounding up and locking up all the heroes. You know, it should be a Civil War Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that lack of imagination for having... I mean, there should have been a better reason. You know, if it had gotten to be a religious fervor of, you know, we're a God-fearing country, but there are these other heretic people claiming to be gods. Let's go after them. You know, that would have worked.
Have him blow up a religious, you know, a big cathedral
exactly.
during a mass or something,
that.
You know, instead of a sports stadium.
If they had done it on a...
These pagan gods are attacking your Christian values, moral
exactly.
majority.
Exactly.
Fox News, go whip up your people into a frenzy against the Asgardian gods, you know?
If it had not been a big explosion, but a key death or whatever kind of a thing. Some religious leader gets killed as, you know, a quote-unquote innocent bystander, or the fight goes into their cathedral and kills the guy, you know, whatever kind of a thing. There are ways they could have played it into a more interesting twist, and as it was, it seemed very redundant with Civil War. And also, this issue was just so much set up, so little payoff for a four-issue series, and there are things that just didn't make sense to me. Again, you know, Norman flip it out and stuff. Now, we got quite a bit of action where they actually, you know, invade Asgard and stuff. But I came out of this unimpressed and not thinking it was a strong first issue.
It was an extremely weak issue.
And to me, this is an explanation of why Marvel was saying, hey, if you order, you know, X percent, I think it's 175% of your orders for Cap Reborn number 4, everything above that's fully returnable. Why they're giving away a variant cover version of this for every 50 copies of one of the Black Lantern Power Ring promotional issues.
I think it's actually Siege number 3 that they're going to give away a variant cover of.
Okay, I knew it was one of these issues, but they're promoting Siege heavily with those
yeah.
kinds of incentives and gimmicks. And I think they're doing it because they're afraid it's not going to measure up to Blackest Night.
And I think that's the they're addressing the drop off that will occur based on how crappy this first issue was. you know, by having this incentive to pump up the sales on number three.
Well, I'm curious how well this first issue does, because it didn't seem to have the, from where I was sitting, the hype and the "ooh gosh, I can't wait" aspect that like Darkest Night or Secret Invasion or Civil War, some of these other big events have had. Now, I think the first issue is going to do really damn well.
Yeah.
But the question is, how does it stack up to, say, a first issue of Civil War, Blackest Night, Final Crisis, Secret Invasion, those sort of things? And also, like you said, the drop-off. How is that going to go? Because, obviously, I'm getting the rest of these things. I'm getting all the tie-ins. I'm a hardcore Marvel fan in that respect. But this is not one that I think is going to go down as, ooh, this was one of the best events of all time by a long shot. I'm wavering between a low 3 and a high 2, and I'll probably give it the 3.
I go back to a 3 is a good, solid comic, and a 2 is problems but worth reading. So, at best, this gets a 2.
Yeah.
Because there's no way I can call this a good, solid comic. I look at that Suicide Squad issue, and at least it was a solid Secret Six comic book. It wasn't a good.
It may not have been the book we were expecting, but it was a good book.
It was a decent story. It had good action. It moved along. It, you know.
Well, and that's a good point.
This did not. This was a weak story.
Because you're right. That Suicide Squad may not have been the story we were led to believe we would be getting, or the sort of story, I should say. It wasn't done in one. It wasn't. You know, it was the Secret Six issue, not Suicide Squad. Whereas this is exactly what we were kind of told we were going to be getting. It just wasn't that good. So I think I will go with a 2. And I would like to see that this, you know, improve over time. But they telegraphed, I mean, the whole bit with Norman's motivation and him flipping out and stuff. Just, I mean, and by flipping out, it's not like he was suddenly ranting and raving and, you know, throwing things or anything. But he is putting everything on the line for this. And it just seemed to be coming out of nowhere.
I actually liked Embedded more than I liked the main Siege.
Embedded story was good, but I thought it was okay. Let's just—I mean, the setup for that was nil. It was okay. Let's take Ben Urich, and suddenly he's somewhere, you know, and we need to put him in this place, so he's there, and you know, it actually was a much better story in terms of focusing on a couple of characters. It had some good character moments.
That's what
dialogue,
I thought. I mean,
it
was
just fun.
Told a story.
Yeah,
you know, it kind of fleshed out some of the details, and it kind of told a story. I mean, I wouldn't say it was high art, but it at least got a solid 3 from me as a good story. But,
I think it did a better job setting up what kicked off Siege than Siege did.
Siege did, yeah.
That is kind of funny. The other thing that I think gives Siege number 1 a rating of a 2 versus a 3 is the transcript.
Oh yeah, the production error is inexcusable in this high profile of a book.
It's a 4-page transcript, and page 3, the text reprints the text from page 1.
It's a production error. Someone did some kind of a cut and paste error that no one bothered to, you know, no editor. Who's the editor on this? It's like, guy should be smacked.
It's a good question. Where the hell the editor?
Tom Brevoort and Lauren Sankovich is the associate editor. I mean, it's like, you know, that's the kind of stuff that
Brevoort should have caught this. I don't think he needs to read every book under his editorial stuff because he's got enough associate editors. But for a high-profile book like Siege, he needs to. He should have caught the where the hell is Asgard or where does this fit in, and at least have a footnote in the opening page saying this takes place before this, after this, and between these, or whatever. And should have caught the transcript error. You know, that they need to do a better job on that.
That's the kind of stuff that, especially when they go out of their way to have a set-up text page, and it's got pretty big text. You know, the font on the set-up page on Siege is pretty large, as these things go. They had plenty of opportunity here to put an extra couple of paragraphs in explaining some of the seeming inconsistencies in this issue, and that is an editorial shortcoming of this issue.
I would agree. Move on to our other book.
Gigantic number 5.
Now, I'm going to say what was gigantic about this issue was the delay since the last issue.
Yeah.
The previous issue came out on May 20th, 2009. Prior to that, February 25th. So for five-issue series, it took too damn long for this to come out.
And we read and reviewed issue number one of this way back. What episode even was that?
Well, it would have been somewhere on the November 5th episode of 2008. So
yeah, so a real long time ago is the bottom line there, and we liked it.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was a great issue, and it's just by now it's like I read this issue and I didn't go and dig the previous issues out of a box or anything.
Neither
and
did
I. Read them, and it had been so long. Again, another case where they have a story so far that did an inadequate job of reminding me of everything that had gone on in the five-month gap since the last issue.
Well, the funny thing is, what I could recall was more or less what was in the recap, and it wasn't enough for me to get back into the story.
Yeah, and again, there's plenty of room, instead of putting this gigantic logo, you know, putting another three paragraphs of text there to really get me back up to speed would have potentially completely altered my reading of this issue and my appreciation of it. So another editorial failure. You know, people say, hey, you know, what does an editor do? You know, it becomes more apparent when an editor fails to do something that could have enhanced an issue. Because that's the kind of stuff an editor should be doing.
Yeah. Well, they should be acting kind of as a test audience to a certain degree. And you know, reading stuff saying, well, you know, it's really hard for me to get back into the story. Maybe if you spend a little bit up front to reset the scene or whatever. And you know, this is one of those things that I think in trade or all at once is going to read pretty good. I thought technically this was a reasonably good issue. I think there were some accessibility problems with this issue. But really, for the final issue of a 5-issue limited series, it's kind of unrealistic for them to have a full couple of pages at the beginning recapping everything and, you know, forgiving you for not having read the previous issues. So
I get that. And that's why I don't necessarily need to see that in the story, because I mean this is going to be collected in a trade paperback and it would interrupt the flow of the trade paperback to have story pages with that. So I'm just saying, it's like, put three or four paragraphs on the inside of the front cover that are not going to get reprinted in the trade paperback and, you know, get me back into the story. As it was, regardless of that, I thought that the ending was sort of weak and confusing. It fell short for me.
Yeah, for me it fell short. I thought the ending was questionable, and a lot of it was I was disconnected from the characters because it had been so long. You know, I had a similar feeling to this that I had with Planetary, although Planetary was really on a bigger scale with that the final issue there, where I thought it was a great issue, I just didn't care because I couldn't remember who they were saving and stuff. Whereas here, there was enough that had been set up in the four issues that it's like, no, wait, whose side was this guy on? What was the exact plot twist they had last issue? And, you know, I've read like 500 comics in the last month or two, much less in the last seven. That, you know, maybe a more detailed recap page would have helped if they had a couple more clues in the story. Because I agree, they shouldn't spend a page or two at the beginning resetting the scene and, you know, minute detail or whatever. But I think they could have given us a few more clues in the captions and dialogue as we went through.
Well, you know, also they're kind of jumping back and forth in time here, showing the same scene from different perspectives and such.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
Or I guess he really went back in time or something, because, you know, that one guy gets zapped and then something happens and you're back before he gets zapped, or I don't know what, putting a shield around him and then he's alive and it's like, what? And the wrap-up was just, you know, 3 years later, and it's like a couple of pages, and it's like potentially like setting it up for, you know, with the end, question mark. Is there going to be more gigantic? And I'm like, well, Mr. Remender, you can do some more, but I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah. For me, I gave this I gave it a 3, but not a strong 3. It's one of those where the parts that didn't work for me were because I had such poor recollection of the previous issues. And maybe I'm being a little generous in, as a result of that.
It got the 2 for me also. I thought it was not, again, a 3 being a solid comic. This was not a solid comic to me. And this is a prime example of the kind of thing that makes me – I love supporting independent comics. This is the exact kind of thing that makes me regret supporting independent comics sometime. I'll continue to support them. But this is the kind of thing where, you know, I get a huge delay, I get a weak wrap-up, and – you know, and sometimes you don't even get a wrap-up, but it's the kind of thing where had I not bought the issues and just ignored them entirely and just picked up the trade paperback and read it all at one time, I would have, I'm 95% certain, gotten a much superior reading experience out of this. And, you know, my point there is that the people who suffer from this kind of storytelling are the exact people who are showing the most support to the creator and the monthly format. And the people who trail along afterwards and pick up the pieces, you know, in the trade paperback, they get a superior reading experience. And that kind of irritates me.
No, I agree with that. But I think even if I had read this either in trade or all at once, that final issue that we're talking about here still would have, frankly, disappointed me.
I think the ending would have disappointed me regardless, but I would have had less issues in general with this.
No, and I agree with that, because the rest of the story would have been fresh in your mind, etc. I'm just trying to think how much am I either forgiving it because of my poor recollection, and how much... It's one of those right now I'm kind of really between a 2 and a 3, and I'm leaning towards shifting it to a 2 because we've read enough things where even the final issue of a series, I go back to like Dragon Prince and a few others, just completely blew me away as a single issue. Whereas this was just kind of almost a blah single issue.
Just like, well, I better wrap this up.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I will go with the 2, and it's one of those things that, you know, maybe it would have read better for me as all at once or whatever, but it's being serialized. You know, and if they can't get it out on time and that hampers my reading experience, I don't really feel too bad about, you know, I don't say grading them down because of that or whatever, but I do think if I gave this a 3, it would be because I was being a bit too forgiving due to the delay. Again, this series started, I believe we both gave it a 5 out of 5. It was brilliant, and I don't feel that that brilliance was in this issue. And
yeah,
it disappoints me.
And I don't – now I'm going to say it, but I don't want to – I have no knowledge of this, and Rick Remender could very well, you know, like reach out of my computer and slap me in the head. But, you know, it just – when the first issue of this came out was before Remender got his job at Marvel. And he – I'm pretty sure, or at least it was like – you know, it had to have been written before he got his job at Marvel. And this one, you know, and I could just see the care that he put into it and all that. This one really, to me, reads like it was just done to finish the thing off. And, you know, in between the time that he's spending putting together his good stuff for Marvel.
Kind of a phoning it in quality, and that's kind of the vibe I got.
You know,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but that was just what I got out of this. And I normally really like Remender's writing, but this issue was really not up to the standards that I have normally see him turning in.
Yeah, no, I can see
that. I can't I cannot, you know, speak to what the actual circumstances were behind it. All I know is that the impression I got as a reader is that the ending of this was just was not up to what I think he could have done. You know, when he wrapped up Strange Girl, when he wrapped up Sea of Red, when, you know, he wrapped up, you know, a lot of other things that he's done. I mean, I like the wrap-ups on those, and I, you know, I like those series, you know, or Fear Agent.
I was going to say, some of the final issues of a Fear Agent arc were usually pretty decent standalone issues.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, I've loved a lot of what he does, and, you know, it's just this one, it's, again, given how much I loved the first issue, you know, just big drop-off.
Yeah. So I have not gotten as much of my other books this week read as I would have liked to. I got 31 books and one hardcover, that being The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck. And I've read, again, The Blackest Night, Wonder Woman, Gigantic, we just talked about, actually made it through Nights at the Dinner Table, The Mighty 12, great end to that series. Actually take it back, 30 comics, because I got previews. Red Robin, which I'm still enjoying. I read Siege Embedded, Suicide Squad, and Weird Western Tales. So not quite as many as I thought.
I got two or three others. I got 40 books this week. I get 40 books, and you only got 30. I didn't know. I read the Blackest Night stuff. I read the stuff we were obviously reviewing, the Siege stuff, and I read Knights of the Dinner Table. And that was pretty much it for me.
Yeah, well, as much as I'm loving some of the event books, particularly Blackest Night these days, I really do wish they would go back to focusing on telling really good stories within the titles, and specifically with each individual issue of a title. Because I worry when I see the sales bounce up from some of these gimmicks and you know, events and stuff, and then I look at books like Warlord, which they got my Grell back on it. It's doing some great stuff. It really syncs up with the original Warlord series he did, and it's selling just way down there. And it's like, yeah, I got the 10th issue this week. Am I gonna be able to be getting it next year at this time? So, you know, there's a lot of great comics out there. It is kind of funny that this was one of those weeks where things just, you know, for what we reviewed, not so great.
Yeah, and again, it's like, as I was saying, it's like I liked a lot of the stuff that I read that we didn't review better, and we talked about, you know, like I would give that Blackest Night, Weird Western Tales, that was, to me, at least a high 3, low 4.
I could see giving that a 4, yeah. Same with the Wonder Woman.
The Wonder Woman I gave a solid 4 to.
Yeah.
You know, a good solid, that was a good solid story. Siege Embedded, I would at least give a solid 3 to.
That one, 3 or 4, I could see that, because, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's just the ones that we picked for our review, which we pick them blind. You know, we pick them a couple of weeks ago based on things that we're getting, and, you know.
Like right now, we've already picked what we're going to do not only for next week, but for show 128, which, I mean, those books come out as we record this next Wednesday.
Yeah.
So, sight unseen, we're doing this. And if you guys have stuff you'd like to see us review, let us know. We're going to, starting with episode 128 of the Weekly Spotlight, experiment with a slightly different take on the indie books, where Bob's going to do one and I'm going to do a different one, just because there are a couple of weeks where we don't quite have the overlap on the indie stuff that we'd like.
Yeah, and it'll give us a little bit of variety, too, because it'll allow us to review some books that, you know, one or the other of us would not normally, you know, be reading, and if we were only reviewing books that we both read, we'd never get to certain titles.
Yeah, and it allows us to cover a couple more indie books, and, you know, I really would like to see more readers looking out in that area. You know, we've hit a couple of things where we'll get the first issue, yeah, it didn't quite click with us, but maybe it's perfect for somebody else, you know, like Angel, like God Complex, or some of these others, but there's just a ton of great indie comics out there. So, anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for us this week.
Cool.
Coming up this week also will be our previews episode, so watch out for that.
Join us next week when we discuss Power of Shazam number 48 from DC, Strange number 3 from Marvel, Echo number 18 from Abstract Studios, and an extra look at Ed Hannigan covered from the Hero Initiative.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.